It's episode 91 of the Hodgepodge Podcast. I'm Doug.
And I'm Dirtier. We're here to talk about a hodgepodge of topics from movies, music, TV, and other pop culture events.
And on this episode, we'll be discussing the films Crimson Peak, Steve Jobs, and Our Brand is Crisis. You can reach us at thehodgepodgepodcast at gmail.com or over on our website, thehodgepodgepodcast.com, or look us up on YouTube and iTunes and subscribe, or go to Facebook. Find us on there and like our page. Just search for The Hodgepodge Podcast. And on our first attempt to record this, I screwed up the intro because it's been such a long time since we've recorded it.
It wasn't me.
I know.
But they would never know either way. You pointed that out for no reason whatsoever.
It doesn't matter. I'm an honest guy. It's been a while. We had life get in the way, jobs and such, and trips and such. But we're back. And we're doing a little bit of catch up, talking about the movies of October, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Some of them.
Yeah. And eventually we will do our Attack of the Clones podcast, but we still have 2 full months. We're good people. So we got time. I guess we can just jump right into it because, you know, there's basically the news is the same as it was when we last recorded. The Martian's number one at the box office.
Yeah.
The end.
Nothing much has changed. There's not even any real new geek news to talk about.
No, I mean, there's a lot of stuff, but it's just, you know, if you don't talk about it like on a weekly basis, it's so far in the past.
Well, that's
like,
true. That's true. I don't know what we left, you know, what's
the big news I saw today is that they're going to do reshoots for X-Men Apocalypse and, the strong rumor is that Hugh Jackman will be involved. So expect to see Wolverine in X-Men Apocalypse more than likely.
Like adamantium strong?
Yes. I hope so. and that's basically it. We're still waiting on a trailer for Civil War that's supposed to come out with Star Wars.
Yeah, we did find that out that will come with Star Wars, which we have purchased our tickets.
Yes.
Day one and two tickets.
Actually, it's been so long, we didn't even talk about the new Star Wars trailer.
That's true, yeah.
We talked about it. Matt and I talked about it on the crossover podcast.
For the geek fan who loves sports.
Yeah.
It was wonderful to see the Star Wars trailer premiere with
Monday Night Football.
Fucking Monday Night Football, which I had to endure like 10 minutes of to watch that thing. But it was a great trailer.
It is.
A great trailer in that, you know, it gave us some new images. But it did not ruin the story.
No.
Still nothing of Luke.
Yeah, that's
which
the big
is great.
That's the big thing that people are like, you know, where's Luke? Where's Luke? I saw one headline that was popped up on Yahoo that was kind of spoilerish, but I don't know if it's true or not. It got me thinking of an interesting theory that they didn't pause it because I didn't click on the article.
Sure.
But I'm just like, is it possible that Luke is dead? Maybe?
Like he comes back as a
No, not necessarily comes like his ghost, but like maybe he's like in flashback or something like that. Yeah.
Could be.
But anyway, everybody involved in the movie says that there's a very good reason why he's not in the trailers. And,
I'm glad they're keeping a secret. It's hard to do that.
Oh, yeah. And, Harrison Ford was on Jimmy Kimmel recently and he,
stoned out of his mind probably. Sang
the praises of the cast and, J.J. Abrams, and he also said that, you know, there's a good reason why Mark Hamill's not in the trailer. And
I look forward to it.
Yeah, it looks like it's gonna be pretty cool. The poster came out before the trailer, and I guess the only thing that people had an issue with that, aside from Luke not being on it, is that if you look in the right corner, it looks like there's another Death Star type
weapon. Yeah, it's a fine poster. It's nothing new. I mean, it's your standard poster with
right.
It's got all the stuff going on there. Should got the characters, you know, faces.
Yeah.
Throughout. There's nothing.
One guy's butt.
Nothing crazily iconic about it. That's gonna.
I like it.
The feathers of anybody, but you're right. It's missing Luke again for good reason.
I mean, I would say it's just as good as that Jedi poster. I mean, it's, you know, because it's the same kind of thing. It's like a montage of stuff.
It's just it's a huge montage of stuff. There's a lot going on in it.
Right. There's a lot of characters.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But, no, it's not that it looks bad. It's just there's a lot going on with it. But, yeah, the big deal will be what is Luke? Who is Luke? And we look forward to that. We are ready to go. We Damn it. Tried to get tickets for the local IMAX here, and it's sold out. Well,
they screwed it up.
They did not specifically have a time of when they were going on sale. So they said after the premiere of the trailer was when they were supposed to go on sale.
And the trailer didn't premiere until halftime, which is like 10:15.
This easily, they went on sale about 8:30.
Yeah.
I checked at 8:45, they were sold out.
And the other thing with it was, you know, that pissed me off is that with that theater is that I have their Power Pass. And for James Bond, you know, they're like, hey, you can get in on the early floor to get tickets early before everybody else. I'm like, you're not going to do that for the biggest movie of the freaking year? Thanks a lot.
That's why they're not doing
it. I guess, but I mean, but it's like, you know, maybe for like the opening night showings, you know, it's like, come on. It's like reward. Hey, I paid you $50 for this stupid pass.
That's on you, buddy.
It is. It is. It
but
sucks.
Anyway.
And then when we got tickets for that, I didn't even get to use my pass.
Nope.
So I had to pay. I still had to pay full price. That's bullshit. But I mean, of course, I'm only going to see it twice, so it doesn't matter.
Right. That's all you will see that movie.
Our friend Sean.
It might suck.
I saw our friend Sean on Halloween, and he was like, I've got tickets for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
I'm like,
you got me beat, buddy.
Ready to go, man.
He keeps telling us we need to go to the Grand.
I've been to the Cine Bistro now.
Yeah.
Here. I saw one of the movies we'll be talking about here. Steve Jobs. Place is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
There's no way that the seats at the Grand are better than these. I mean, these are fully wide, fully reclinable, electrically reclinable seats.
For the larger customer.
Yeah. They're set up in like a love seat fashion.
Right.
So we're like, there's two of them together and they have headrest on the ends of two of them. So you can't see the other people. And then you can raise up the arm if you want to, between the two seats. They're really nice.
And you can have a stripper come in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do lap dance and
the food, of course, it's movie theater. It's really expensive. I paid for a matinee. I walked out of there and I spent $40.
Oh my God. You said the sandwich was $12.
Sandwich was rough $12 or $15.
How?
Something. I don't remember exactly.
How much was the cheesecake?
The cheesecake was $8 or $9.
Okay. Because like when you gave me the math, I was like, a $12 piece of cheesecake? What?
I just remember the total when I included they charge you like some percentage of gratuity. I don't know what it is, but I gave them an extra couple bucks. It was like $28,
right?
And it was $12 for the ticket.
Jesus, it's crazy.
So it's and of course you don't have to eat, right?
Right.
You just go and enjoy it. I was just like, I'm going to lunch. I'm going to enjoy myself.
Exactly. Yeah. Treat yourself. I mean, if you're there, you might as well do it.
But it was really nice. I mean, obviously it's not stadium seating because.
Right.
But, you know, you can recline. No, there's no way you got big. These are huge reclining chairs. Mm. It's.
How many are in this?
Oh, it's not a lot. So there's only like five rows. Ooh. It's not a lot. It's not a big theater. And the screen is massive.
Wow.
So you don't have trouble seeing over the top of anybody by any means. But it's only like five, maybe six rows deep. It is not, there's not a lot of room in there.
I love how they have the love seats. It's like, and later we'll be showing porno.
and I know that it's premium pricing and everything, but the staff was really nice.
Yeah.
They
should be.
I know. But I'm just saying, they were really nice. And the way it works is you go in, the way places like this work, you go in before the movie and about 5 minutes before the preview start, they'll do a last call for food.
Right.
You can't, like, get food whenever you want inside there. So,
right.
So they actually have a server come in there.
Right.
And take your order.
That's like the other place, the Rollywood.
Just like Rollywood. Yeah. And take your order, and then they'll bring you your food right before the preview start.
Right.
And it was nice. It was nice. It was expensive, but it's nice. And I would just like to go enjoy a movie there and not eat.
Right.
But anyway.
That's cool. No, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, Star Wars, we're looking forward to that. But, you know, our next big one is actually coming up this week, Spectre.
Yeah, Thursday night.
Finally coming out, and we've been waiting for that one. So
it already opened in the UK, and it made a shit ton of money.
A lot of money.
So, yeah. Suffice to say, there will be another James Bond. But the thing that I read on Collider that's interesting is that after this one, the rights, Sony loses the rights, and then they go up for bid again. And the scuttlebutt in Hollywood is that people think that Warner Brothers is probably going to get it because Warner Brothers money's no object to them, basically.
Yeah.
And they said the Collider's like the only studio who probably won't bid on it is Disney because it's so far out of their wheelhouse. It's like
it doesn't in any way, shape, or form touch family or kids.
He's bordering on R rated. We can't put that out.
Disney doesn't, and they don't need that shit.
No. They got Star Wars.
They laugh at that franchise.
they got Star Wars and Marvel, and that's even before you get to Pixar.
Right.
That's what's going on, basically, in our lives.
Yeah.
And in movies. Let's get started. Well, let's talk about a movie that we saw several weeks ago, because we saw it on a screener. But
looking forward to it. We were highly anticipated.
And I'm not a horror guy, and I was still looking forward to it. Yeah. And even I was disappointed by this movie.
It had everything going for it.
Yeah.
It had a great cast. Guillermo del Toro was directing it. He's more than familiar with the genre.
Yeah.
So, and as you can tell the way we're talking, it was just kind of lackluster.
We're talking about Bridge of Spies. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We're talking about Crimson Peak. And this was supposed to be the big horror movie of October. Unfortunately, what Guillermo del Toro delivered was gothic romance.
he essentially, a gothic romance.
And they're sort of ghosts.
It was sort of a poorly constructed horror movie that you might find, like, for children.
Maybe.
You know what I mean? Because it just wasn't that scary.
But the themes were too adult to be.
It was very. The story was very Henry James-esque.
Mm-hmm.
It was, not only because it was set in Victorian times,
right.
But just the story itself lent itself to that kind of writing, if you will. He didn't write it, right?
I don't think so.
He did.
Was he credited on the screenplay?
Him and Matthew Robbins. So that's right. Just two of them. They both wrote it, though. So anyway, Crimson Peak, I've been looking forward to this since the trailer hit back in March. Because
I thought it was going to be like a haunted house
movie. Yeah, it looked really spooky. And by the way, the look of it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they get nominated for an Oscar for the production design.
But other than that,
I mean, it's nothing to write home about, really.
So the story follows Mia Wasikowska's character, who is she is a young, not heiress,
ingenue.
Well-to-do.
Yeah, she's her from father's
affluent,
well-to-do,
affluent family with her father. And but she's kind of like the independent one.
Yeah.
She's that independent Rose from that Victorian time she wants to make her own way. And she doesn't want to be, tied down necessarily in marriage to just any old suitor. She wants to determine her own fate. And she's trying to be a writer.
She wants Brad Pitt.
Yeah. She's trying to be a writer. And
in the vein of Mary Shelley.
Yes, yeah, that's kind of her
milieu.
Yeah, there you go. So the story follows her character as basically she is she meets through her father, she meets another person who seems to be an independent man, entrepreneur who wants to make his own way.
Right.
Played by Tom Hiddleston, who, everyone should know from
Avengers.
Loki.
As Loki, yeah. And Alan's favorite movie, Thor.
I don't know how much we really want to give away or spoil in this. There's no real twist here, but...
Really isn't.
So it turns out Hiddleston's character is not exactly what he seems.
Right.
And between him and his
sister, played by Jessica Chastain.
Jessica Chastain, who is
completely over the top.
Yeah, she put on some dark hair in this one, and went a little crazy.
In my review, I said she went to the Wednesday Addams Image School.
so what happens here is he starts courting her.
Right.
Her father disapproves,
and he investigates.
Investigates. He is later murdered, and she does end up marrying
Tom Hiddleston's
character, Thomas Sharp is his name. She does end up marrying him, and they move out to his estate, which
is England.
In England, right, right. This is in America. Right. They move overseas to England to his.
That's one of the
to
major,
his very rundown estate.
Yeah, that's one of the major issues I had with the end of the movie.
So she's moved into this very, very rundown estate that's owned and managed solely by Hiddleston and Chastain, the two of them. So all three of them are living there together.
Yeah, the house is completely dilapidated, in so much as that there's even like a big hole in the roof.
And I guess I skipped a little bit. You're better at these synopsis than I am. But you know, when she was a child, she saw a ghost figure
her mother who died,
who had just died.
Right.
And her mother whispered to her, "Beware of Crimson Peak."
Right.
Who knows what that means? Right. Oh, wait. I know what that means. So they moved to, I don't know what it's called, Ashbury Farms or Ashbury Hills or what, you know, whatever the hell it's
Hillshire
called.
Hillshire Farms.
There. Whatever the hell it's called.
Right, right, right.
And as
the
as it turns out, the nickname of this place is called Crimson Peak due to the fact that, it's the clay soil.
Right,
that comes up when it rains, and when it snows, it seeps up through the ground and makes everything red.
You sure this place wasn't in Raleigh?
Whatever, it's kind of irrelevant. So you know, yes, you and her finally realize that this is Crimson Peak. Beware of that. And by the way, that is the only sighting of a ghost you've seen so far in this movie. About an hour and a half into it,
the best part about that is that the mother, right? So the mother comes to see her, and she's like, it's supposed to be her mother. And she's totally like, creeptastic and like skeletal hands and touching her.
Yeah, yeah. Then, why you want to be creepy, mom?
And then she later on she sees her again and she's like, it's like she's almost like she wants to eat her face or something like that. She's like, it's like, what are you doing? You're my mother.
You're my mother.
It's just like, what's going on? Stupid.
So when she gets to Crimson Peak, she actually does start to see some other ghosts,
right?
Who seem to be warning her. How she knows they're warning her and not trying to eat her, I don't know.
Yeah.
But she deciphers that they are trying to warn her and actually tries to talk with one of them.
Right.
About, you know, what's going on.
Right.
And all the while she's being fed.
Yeah.
Fed by Jessica Chastain's character. Again, I don't know how much we want to give away here. This is just the plot of the movie. There's not a twist here.
No, there isn't. And then, meanwhile, while she's off doing that, her childhood friend, I guess, who is
the person who wanted to be with her.
Right. He's a doctor.
He's a doctor.
He's an eye doctor. Yeah. And he is played by Guillermo del Toro's new Robert De Niro, Charlie Hunnam, who was also in Pacific Rim. And he's just as boring in this. And hey, stick to Sons of Anarchy, dude. Okay, because his character was not written well, and he basically continues the father's investigation after he's murdered.
After the father's murdered, he actually tracks down the PI who the father had worked on. The father basically what the father did was he didn't go. Well, I guess he figured out some of it. He didn't delve too deep. He figured out enough to know this guy's shady, and he paid him to leave.
Right.
And to break his daughter's heart.
Right.
However, what Hiddleston does is he does this publicly and then writes her a letter saying,
I didn't mean it.
So
the investigator is played by Bern Gorman, who was in Torchwood. And he was
a lot of stuff actually.
Yeah, but I would say he's for geeks, he's most well known for Torchwood.
For sure.
And then but he was also in The Dark Knight Rises.
Yep.
And he was also in Pacific Rim as one of the two kaiju scientists.
Very recognizable face. If you don't know the name.
Yeah. You know who he reminded me of a little bit? Getting off topic a little bit. Yep. His character kind of reminded me. I mean, he's not in it that much. Right.
Huh.
The character kind of reminded me a little bit of James Spader's character from Lincoln. Remember when he was the guy who was like,
I don't remember that enough, man. I don't remember that movie.
James Spader was like the best part of the movie.
I don't remember that enough.
It's aside from Daniel Day-Lewis, obviously. But he was the guy who was like, got the representatives to vote the way they wanted.
Right.
He was like the real shyster. And so that's who he reminded me of.
Yeah, a little bit. But he's on the level.
He's just doing a job.
Yeah. Hunnam's character takes it upon himself to go to England to find her and let her know.
He must have taken a Jaeger to get there because he got there pretty damn quick.
Yeah. So what he figured out, by the way, is that these people had what Hiddleston and Chastain, their as brother and sister, what they had been doing is, not only were they married, but they were, yeah.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they were. That's what their ring was for.
No, yeah. They weren't.
They were.
No, they were really.
They're really brother and sister, but they were also married.
No, I don't think they were married.
I think they were. And no, they was weren't. The ring just what? Yeah.
That was just the mother's just ring.
The mother's ring.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, they what they
I thought what the twist was going to be is that they were married.
Well, I thought that it's that was part of what was uncovered, that he was already married. Oh,
because so, right. Yeah.
What they uncovered was that he had been married several times.
Right.
And every one of these marriages ended in the death of the woman, in which he then, through the will, took over her money and property and allowed them to keep.
Basically, this movie basically boils down, like, we were expecting, like, a spooky gothic horror
ghost story,
haunted house horror movie ghost story. Nothing crazy like, you know, Eli Roth or whatever like that. Nothing disgusting like that. But, you know, just like a classic thing. And what we got was an episode of Law and Order SVU basically.
Or Murder She Wrote.
Yeah, right.
It's really just Murder She Wrote. It's kind of that. Dumbed
down. I would say the content of their relationship is more SVU.
I mean, that's you only think that because when the movie opened, you heard dong dong.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right. Careful, Doterra popped everyone dong dong. Then he faded into the darkness.
So, that's what these people do. Tom Hiddleston's character marries someone. They end up murdering the person in some given way.
Right.
In this way, they're trying to poison.
Right.
Slowly poison.
Mia, what's her face?
Mia Wasikowska, whatever. To which she at some point figures out, and you know, I don't understand why
he tells her.
Well, that, even before then, she's suspicious because of the ghosts and whatnot, but anyway, she's more or less trapped and isolated at this place because they're snowed in. The actual town or any town is miles and miles away. I don't know. Hunnan's character gets there, confronts them. Instead of just saying, I'm taking her with me, he tries to be, like, sneaky about it instead of just being like, unhand her, I'm taking her away. Like, I don't understand the sneakiness that he tried to go through. Guess what happens? Oh, well, he doesn't necessarily die, but he's wounded. He's wounded very badly.
By this point, I stopped paying attention.
Yeah.
And I was like, do I have any popcorn left?
if you're wondering, you know, if we're kind of, you know, little nonchalant about this, it's because the story's just really dumb.
It was very pedestrian.
Yeah, it basically ends up, guess what? The good guys win.
And like, but the thing
Hiddleston,
is,
Hiddleston and his sister, who was actually in love with him, like, she was, like, in love with him.
Yeah, it's a
character.
It's a Jaime Lannister, Cersei Lannister.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, that's why I thought they were married, because they were fucking.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you said you didn't know how much you want to spoil. You spoiled everything.
Whatever.
But the thing is like, and I'm going to, you know, I guess this is like a bad way to approach it, because while the story is pretty pedestrian, and, you know, the screenplay is just okay, I like Mia What's-Her-Face and most stuff, I didn't get enough horror from her, enough terror from her.
Yeah. She's a lot better in, like, Stoker.
Yeah, so I didn't get you know, a lot. I didn't get that.
But I don't even know that's her fault, because the problem is this story is not a horror story.
Right. But she should have been more scared of the ghosts.
More scared. She wasn't scared. Yeah, there was no
tension. The
little
girl was more scared.
There was no tension here. Yeah. There was no, like, suspense.
Yeah.
Because you always, as soon as they tried to bring any suspense to you, it was immediately taken away by something else. And I could actually forgive, as you call it, a pedestrian story, if there were actually scares in it.
Yeah.
None.
Like we said, it's a lavish design. It looks really good. But the problem, I think, and it solely comes from our expectations. You know, we expected something else. It was kind of like a bait and switch from the trailer. And we expected one thing, and it turned into something else. And we were like,
I didn't realize Doug Jones was in this. That's funny.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He played the ghost of the
Yeah, because he's his motion.
He's the go-to. Doug Jones, if you don't know, Guillermo del Toro. He was in Pan's Labyrinth. He's in the Hellboy.
He plays Abe Sapien.
He's very well known as a
He was also on Falling Skies.
Yeah, he's very very well known, like sci-fi type of actor.
Right. He does a lot of creature work. Yeah, and creature stuff like work. That's kind of like Andy Serkis.
Yeah. But anyway,
that's Crimson Peak. Kind of disappointing.
It's not a terrible movie.
It's not.
It's just completely far removed from what was expected and the high level that Guillermo del Toro normally brings to us.
Right.
It's not terrible. I guess maybe a B minus, maybe a C plus. I don't know what you gave it, but that's probably.
I give it a C.
Okay, I'd give it maybe a little higher.
I'd give it a C. But I was very disappointed.
Yeah, it is a disappointing movie. Crimson Peak, I'd say steer clear of that. Maybe catch it on...
cable.
Redbox or cable.
Yeah. Another movie I gave a C to that you didn't see was Vin Diesel's latest vehicle.
Oh, I'm sorry I missed that.
The Last Witch Hunter, which had a good premise, but then turned into complete
schlock. Dungeons & Dragons the movie?
I wish. It's better than that movie. Yeah, of course. But, the premise is really cool. He plays like a witch hunter and he's the last and, and basically somebody breaks the pact between humans and magic users and starts killing people and he has to find out what's going on. And, it's an interesting premise, but it devolved into schlock pretty quick.
At what point is the 24-sided die brought out?
20-sided die. Whatever. There's no such thing as 24-sided die.
There could be.
No, there isn't.
There could be, though.
There isn't.
Someone should make it.
No.
Yes, they should.
No.
They could. They could. They could and they should. No. Could and should. Anyway.
But, so that's not great either.
Well, is it that's more of an adventure type of
thought? It's like an action. It's an action fantasy thing. Okay. And Vin Diesel is like one of these guys. It's like, I like him in certain stuff, but, you know, it's... Sometimes, I mean, I was scratching my head at some of his line deliveries.
Like I said, the only thing he's suited for is Groot. Because you don't see his face, and he says three words.
Iron Giant, too.
Iron Giant, you know, he's okay for voice work, okay? Right. Voice work.
Right.
But I don't get any real charisma from that guy, even though the Fast and Furious people love those fucking movies. But yeah. Nothing for me.
Yeah. Another movie that I saw... that you haven't seen yet, or
I definitely want to see Bridge of Spies.
Bridge of Spies, Steven Spielberg's latest. You wouldn't even know it's Steven Spielberg because there was like barely any fanfare for this movie.
That's true. It's weird,
and it's really Bridge of Spies is another movie that I don't ever want to accuse Steven Spielberg of a bait and switch, but I was kind of like, oh, okay, this is not what I was expecting.
So it's not thrillery at all.
No, not at all.
Procedural type of thing.
It's more of a historical film, okay. and that's fine. It's a solid. That's the thing with Bridge of Spies. It's a solid historical picture, but it's nothing to write home about. Nothing like. And some people were like, I saw some critic was like, it's his best movie since Saving Private Ryan. I'm like, it's not even his best movie since Catch Me If You Can. Because obviously you didn't see that, because that came out in 2001.
That's a great fucking movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
By the way, that movie is the movie that actually made me start respecting Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, really?
Because I hated him before that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, hated him.
He's good in that.
He is. He turned my thought process on him.
I like him a lot in Inception. And he looks like he's going to be great in this movie, The Revenant, with Tom Hardy. Iñárritu's next one. That comes out at the end of the year. But anyway, Bridge of Spies, you know, Tom Hanks is good as usual, and the cast is fine. Mark Rylance plays the spy, who he's really, really good in the movie. But it's just...
And Tom Hanks is like a lawyer.
He plays a tax lawyer who gets recruited by the government to argue on behalf of this guy.
But clearly there's a reason, because he's just a tax lawyer. Why is he chosen?
I think he was in the military and stuff like that, okay. and they went to his firm, because... Because they have to, they want to show that like the guy's getting a fair trial, but he really isn't getting a fair trial. And Tom Hanks,
he's just kind of the figure man for the government to
right. But the thing is,
let me guess. But Tom Hanks realizes that there's more than meets the eye and digs a little deeper.
No. It's not that at all. What he does is he really believes in the law and the Constitution and stuff like that. He goes, no, if you're going to give this guy a fair trial, we have to give him a fair trial. And he's like saying, you know, hey, you know, this search was illegal and stuff like that.
So he's within the government, but he's fighting the government.
He's not within the government. He's like,
he was in the military, but at
right.
This point
he's just a lawyer. He's just a tax lawyer, and his firm gets tapped to defend this guy, and they choose Tom Hanks to do it.
Okay,
and he tries to really defend him, but they won't let him. Like the judge is like against him. Like if this was a Law and Order episode, Jack McCoy would have said, you know, you need to recuse yourself, you know, and all that stuff, you know, but And then,
well, first he would have stuttered a little bit first because,
nice,
because Jack can't, you know.
And then and then what happens after the trial is that through a back channel, he gets this letter, and
the trial in which he probably lost.
Yes, yeah. And he gets a letter from the guy's quote unquote family, and it's really the Russians because they capture a U-2 pilot. And they want to trade.
Oh, I see. And they basically said,
so then they send,
said because this was a high profile case, they knew who his lawyer was.
Right.
And
so then again, the CIA recruits him, and then they send him to go negotiate. But they're like, we're not involved. You know, it's like this. You're negotiating as his lawyer. You know, so right. It's like I was expecting something a little like. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I...
But...
Granted, this was me knowing nothing about it. That's exactly how
I... But there's really, like, no suspense at all. Okay. It's really just a straight-ahead historical
But not movie. Terrible.
Speaking of U2 pilots, Bono's daughter plays Tom Hanks' oldest daughter in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Eve Hewson. But it was... Like I said, it was solid. It was good. I enjoyed it. But at the same time, I was like, this ain't gonna win any Oscars. Yeah. So... just a solid movie from Spielberg and Hanks.
I mean, look, they can't all be excellent.
Right.
It's just weird because when you put Spielberg and Hanks together,
right,
you expect a little more advertising.
Yeah.
You think that they'd be like, this is Spielberg and Hanks together again kind of thing. It's
getting good reviews. And to be honest, the thing that shocked me the most about Bridge of Spies was all the production company, title screens that showed up before this movie. I'm like, how is it so... fucking hard for Steven Spielberg, arguably the greatest director of his generation,
mm-hmm.
to get financing for a goddamn film.
It's really weird. Because marketing for this was just odd.
Yeah, and that's what his argument is. And this was, I think it was Disney. Disney did this. It was Touchstone. And that's what his argument against superhero movies is. He's like, you know, they make all these superhero movies. Yeah. He's like, but
they're
then I can't. Steven Spielberg, I can't even get money to make a goddamn movie. Yeah. You know,
they're taking up those movies are taking up all the marketing.
Yeah,
that's what people care about now. I understand his point.
Yeah,
he wants to make a whatever you want to call it serious movie. I mean, I'm not saying that superhero movies. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, there's only one serious superhero
movie. Look, I love the superhero genre of movies that they're doing now, but it is starting to get, dare I say, oversaturated. I've said it before, I'll say it again. There is going to come a point where the audience is going to start turning on these movies.
It's probably right around October of 2016 when Gambit comes out, the movie that nobody asked for.
I asked for it.
No.
I don't disagree with Spielberg. You can't just make one kind of movie.
But then of course on the other hand you have Kevin Feige who argues that they're not all one kind of movie. He's like, you know,
you're right. Yeah. Superhero genre is
Cap 2, which is like a
very,
political thriller.
I can have a foot on both sides of the fence.
Right.
I see it. But Feige is right and Spielberg is right.
Right.
But they're in middle ground.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you're saying that's just a solid...
It's a solid movie,
but nothing great.
But nothing spectacular.
Okay.
And then I'm saving the best, I'm assuming, for last.
Okay.
So,
well, let's talk about another one that's almost in the same vein of solid, but maybe not great, that we both saw. Steve Jobs?
I'm saving that for last.
That's your great one?
Well, the best of all the movies we're talking
about.
That's
true. All right. We'll get to that one later. What?
We saw a movie.
Oh, God. I forgot about the other one.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Well, two. This discussion will take all of 2 minutes. We saw Keanu Reeves. And we were thinking this was going to be.
Well, not Keanu Reeves, but Eli Roth.
In Keanu Reeves.
Right.
I mean, it looked like a pretty cool...
Yeah, we thought this was going to be maybe like Keanu Reeves building on his John Wick, cult status.
Yeah, very... Well, but horror twist on it, right? I almost saw this as it could be kind of like The Gift was.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as I saw like the premise, I was like, "This isn't a horror movie. It was a thriller."
No,
it's not even that.
It was a lot like I don't know if you saw it. It's called something games.
Reindeer Games. No.
Yeah, no. Anyway, I'll think of it later.
We're talking about Knock Knock.
Funny Games.
Okay. We're talking about Knock Knock, and this movie, I guess it was meant to be a satire of movies like that. But
it was.
You said it reminded you of Hard Candy.
Yeah.
My thing with that is...
It's between Hard Candy and Funny Games.
But see, for me, with Hard Candy is that, in that, Patrick Wilson was actually a bad guy.
Like, oh, yeah. I'm not drawing every line
this,
of... saying it's completely similar. Just the idea of what happened.
Right. What happens is
that... Hard Candy is a great movie.
Oh, Hard Candy's fantastic. Yeah. It's so creepy. Yeah. But anyway, Keanu Reeves plays a happily married architect who has an artist, hot Latina artist wife, two kids who are terrible actors, and a terribly written screenplay to start off the movie. It's interesting that they went to go start their long weekend on Father's Day, which is always a Sunday. So, nice weekend. But basically, they go off to away for the weekend, leaving him home alone because he has to do work. And these two hot young girls.
Well, I believe originally he was going to meet up with them later, I think.
Right? Maybe, if he finishes work. Yeah. But these two hot young girls show up. It's pouring rain outside, and they show up at his door. Begging him to come inside to...
They want directions.
Right. They want directions, and then they're asking about... then he's like, oh, I'll call you an Uber and all this kind of stuff. Basically,
They seduce him.
They seduce him. It basically, more terrible, terrible dialogue, which... And I'm just like... You could just put all the dialogue for like the first 20 minutes of the movie just in parentheses. He says, how fast can we get these girls naked? And that's really all it is. He fucks them. And then it turns it. Then they won't leave.
Yeah,
and that's basically
they refuse to leave the house.
They refuse to leave the house,
and then they tell him that they're underage,
15, which
and that,
they're, it's so, impossible
because he says he's going to call the cops.
Right.
They say, well, go ahead. They would probably like to know that we are not of age and you fucked us.
Yeah, they said they were like 15. I'm like, that's impossible.
Yeah, bullshit.
They're like, because if you look at their profiles on IMDb,
I'm terrible at knowing age, but.
Yeah.
There's zero chance.
And I forget what the girls' names are. They're hot as shit. But anyway, and they just make his life a living hell.
Tits McGee number one and Tits McGee number two.
Tits McGee, because she's Spanish. So but they make his life a living hell, and seemingly for no reason. Cause like I was waiting for like the other shoe to drop to say, okay, what do they have on this guy which is making them do this?
Or some kind of a backstory as to why they're psychologically messed up enough to want to play this little game.
Well, the one girl, I think that she was molested. Probably,
they say that,
right.
But they lie so much you just don't know what was true or what was not, right? So and eventually what they do is what you find out is this is a game that they've played before.
Yeah,
and they actually end up, before they've killed the guy who they seduce and torture basically.
Right.
So Keanu Reeves is in there and they're playing all kinds of weird games with him and he keeps trying to escape.
Right.
They eventually force him to fuck him again. They tie him up and then they video that.
Yeah. And put it in his Facebook.
Put it in his face while she's wearing his daughter's underwear. Oh my god! It was like the worst. It was like it was
and
like,
her schoolgirl.
It was like,
uniform.
Okay, Eli Roth, you got us. That's disgusting. All right. Yeah. I'm pretty sure like that's what he thought of. What if I could make a movie that revolves around naked women who you're too repulsed to even see as naked women because they're wearing young girls' underwear? Like
he succeeded.
He did,
and it wasn't just because of that. Because like it was like the next morning after the first time he banged them. And, like, the way they were behaving, I'm just like, ugh, God.
Well, they were acting like they were 15.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, she was drinking syrup right out of the bottle. I'm like, what are you,
why?
Five?
Like, why? I don't understand what's going on here. Like, what is the...
It was terrible.
And he was creeped out, too. So, eventually, the movie ends.
This movie's fucking terrible.
It is terrible. You didn't even see the end.
And I didn't even watch it. I went up... I was watching it on... I rented it on iTunes. And I'm like, I can't take this movie anymore. I can't stand it. I actually went to Wikipedia to say, what's the twist? Oh, there is no twist? We're done. We're done.
So, like, eventually, what they do is they end up... As I said, they took his phone and they videoed that.
Right.
They had tied him up. They videoed them having sex with him while he's tied up.
Right.
Which, oh, by the way, you can just claim, yeah, they restrained me. I can't fucking do anything. Like, what do you want? Right? Like, I don't know why.
And the first time that he bangs them, I mean, like they really, like, they practically rape him basically to start. I mean, cause he's just like, no. Like, he's being like a stand up guy.
Yeah,
then
he's trying. Yeah. Yeah.
There's
the
only
way,
so much you can take.
Yeah, it's not like his character was playing like some creepy guy who was, right. He truly was happily married and he just, he was fully seduced.
Yeah.
And just got to a breaking point as a man where, yeah, what can you do when you got two hot girls?
Yeah, when you got two girls kind of reaching your pants, grabbing your dick. It's right. Like, something's going to happen.
So the movie ends with, they bury him in the backyard, like, vertically. So up to his neck.
Right.
They bury him. And then, they post that video to his Facebook wall.
Yeah.
And then set the phone in front of him so he's watching, like, all these comments of this video, like, you're a sick bastard, oh my god! And then the wife and kids come home, and then the movie ends.
Mercifully.
And they've destroyed the house, they've, like, graffitied it with all kinds of shit. And that's the end of the movie.
I hope there's a sequel.
Served no real purpose as a movie.
It really doesn't. It's like I said, I mean, there needed to be some kind of, like with Hard Candy, there needed to be some kind of twist.
There's no real arc.
No, there isn't.
There's nothing there. It isn't.
It's garbage.
You don't know. You don't even get a backstory of the girls like you would in Hard Candy. Like, they're, what's the reasoning here?
Right. It's terrible.
It was a bad movie. Yeah.
Terrible.
Solid D effort for Eli Roth on this one.
Yeah, it was awful. And then another movie we saw on a screener just recently is a movie that. Another disappointment. It was...
What am I forgetting?
Our Brand is Crisis.
Oh, Jesus.
This is a movie that was produced by George Clooney and his producing partner, Grant Heslov. And I believe Clooney was supposed to be the main character, but they rewrote it.
I tried to read up on that, and I never saw it.
They rewrote it for a woman, and Sandra Bullock is the main character. Billy Bob Thornton is her rival. And they play political consultants who are brought in to, like, basically fix campaigns. Not to fix the results, but, I mean, like, to, you know, tinker and get their guy
locked
in.
Well, they do a lot of shady shit.
They do.
But they it's not like they're stealing
the
polling data.
Exactly. Right. And it has, it's supposed to be like a political satire, basically, and it has funny moments, but it was really just kind of okay.
It's a very cynical look
at
politics and the campaigning of politics is what it is. My problem with this movie is from start to finish, I didn't care about a single character in the movie.
Yeah, her character is very unlikable.
All of them are.
Yeah.
I didn't care about anyone in this movie. It's not like, it's, and I'm sure this is by design, but it's not like you've got one of the political figures that you're rooting for.
Right.
Like, it's not like you're like, oh, this guy's a stand-up guy. You're rooting for him to win.
Right.
It's not like you're like, she's a stand-up person, so I want her to,
right,
to do well. She's just as shitty as Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah.
They do try to give her kind of an emotional backstory.
Right.
In that she did a shitty thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's her emotional backstory.
Right.
So where the movie starts off is Sandra Bullock is kind of living in isolation.
Yeah, she's retired.
Retired, very young age, retired because of something that happened that divulges itself later in the movie.
I was never really clear on that, too. We'll talk about it afterwards. Well, at one point they said that happened, like, at the beginning of her career. And then, like, it was, you know, and then they were like, oh, but this was later.
It was like her first thing is what they said.
Right.
But why she later, is that what you're saying? Is why she later
retired, why didn't she go off the deep end then?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
You're right.
Yeah, I don't know.
But anyway, so they come to bring her out of retirement for this mayoral gubernatorial race in.
The mayoral race was the one, which is the bad thing. This was a presidential race in.
You're right. The mayoral race
is it
was
Chile. Is it Chile?
Peru. No,
I think it was Chile.
Okay,
I think
it was a South American country.
Right. Her client is the guy from Clear and Present Danger.
That's right.
Not the drug lord. The guy who double crosses him.
Yeah. Well,
he looks like Phil Hartman. He looks like the Latino Phil Hartman.
It's who I will call Escobar. We know that's not. That's technically who that was modeled after. Right.
Right.
It was kind of like his side. His
right hand man
who double crosses him. Right. Right.
He looks like the Latino Phil Hartman.
Yeah. 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 So she's hired on as his political strategist.
Right.
To help him win the election when he's only like. At 8%.
Yeah.
He's polling at like 8%. So right. he's dead in the water, and she comes on to revive the campaign. And,
right.
And, her reason for taking it is because she's shown that her rival political strategist, the one who she can never beat,
right.
played by Billy Bob Thornton, is running the other guy's campaign.
Right.
So she takes this upon herself to try to beat him.
Basically. Speaking of Billy Bob Thornton, they've announced that they're going to start filming Bad Santa 2.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw that.
It might be a little too little, too late.
We'll see. But it'll still have a few laughs for sure. So basically, what this movie turns into, which is part of the satire of it,
right,
is that it's not so much about the candidate winning as the political strategist against the political strategist winning. They're just trying to one up each other and beat each other,
right?
Any means necessary,
right?
And how they don't give two shits about the ideology.
Right.
Of the candidate.
Right.
They're there for one reason.
Well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're there for one reason, to win.
Right.
It's all about winning. And they're both very good at what they do, clearly, is how this is set up.
Right.
And, you know, so she gets down there to Chile, Peru, wherever the fuck it is. And she's originally very just kind of lackluster about running campaign. I think she's just there for the paycheck.
Right.
She just wants the money. And then once Billy Bob Thornton actually confronts her, she gets like full steam into the campaign in terms of, I just want to beat Billy Bob Thornton. I just want to destroy him once.
Right.
Go ahead. Cause I've lost.
The biggest problem I had with this movie, aside the fact that she's pretty unlikable as a character, and like I said, there are funny moments in it. Uproarious, but chuckle. But the problem, biggest I have with this movie, is that things happen too easily in this movie. There's this kid who Dirty A was convinced was going to end up being the president's illegitimate son. That turned out to not be true, unfortunately. But he was gung-ho for this guy. He was all behind him because as a little kid, he met him. And there was a picture of him, and he picked him out of the crowd.
But strangely, they followed this character around, throughout the whole movie.
Right.
He's going to be
and then,
a pivotal role or something.
Right.
And then
what happens is, spoiler alert, when the guy gets elected,
he does the exact opposite of
what he said he was going to do. He does a 180 on what he said he was going
to
do.
What he campaigned to do, he's now doing the exact opposite.
And then this kid, instead of being like, Why is this happening? No, he immediately 180s himself, and he's like, I'm against you now.
Sandra Bullock protesting and riding with the rest of them.
And Sandra Bullock, who is this cynical political warrior the whole movie,
right.
All of a sudden in the last 5 minutes, she turns on a dime too. Yeah. And then she's just like, nah, I'm a liberal. I need to change.
And the funny thing about this kid's character, not a kid, but he's young.
He's young 20s probably. Yeah.
Funny thing about his character is the whole movie, you were never to understand that he cared about a particular ideology.
Mm-hmm.
He cared about the man.
Right.
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 And so why would he give a shit what this man's doing? He just cared about the man anyway. Right.
Right.
So it shouldn't matter what he chose to do politically. Right. He was just brainwashed to like this man.
Right.
So it was really weird to see him turn the way he did for, inexplicable. For what should be very explicable reasons, but because of the way they've written the character, it didn't make much sense.
Yeah, the movie is just
So
Its moments, but it on cable.
You have a movie like this, right? Which is, it's set up, it's a versus movie, right?
Right.
Blank versus blank.
Right. Spy versus spy.
Yes. But you don't care about one side or the other. When you don't care about one side or the other or none of the characters, it's just, you're just along for the ride watching what's just kind of very pitiful movie.
And it doesn't even end with like the two of them both getting their comeuppance or anything like that. Like, it doesn't even end like that. Nope. So it's like, yeah, I mean, it was okay.
It's like, oh, look, she decided to go work for a socioeconomic relief fund after this.
Yeah.
So she learned her lesson. Like, okay.
Yeah.
You're not going to fight against this president who you put in power who's now destroying the nation?
The guy from Clear and Present Danger lied to us.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think you probably even liked a little more than I did. I didn't.
I did. I mean, I think I liked the humor in it. Because I did.
I thought Billy Bob Thornton did a really good job.
He was great.
He was great. Great character to watch. But other than that, I didn't care about anyone in this movie.
Yeah.
Not acting wise or their actual character.
Right.
I just didn't. Nothing struck a chord with me.
So let's move on to a movie
that I already tried to move on to.
That you already tried to move on to, and that's Danny Boyle's Steve Jobs. This is a film that was in development hell for a little bit there, for a short time there. It's based on Walter Isaacson's authorized biography of Steve
Jobs.
And
that's probably because in between this one, they attempted two or three other.
Yeah, they did Jobs. They did Jobs with Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah.
I never saw it, but all I can tell you is that he looks like Steve Jobs. I mean, he really does. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much probably all I had going for him. This movie is, was Jonah Hill in that one?
Yeah, I think that was the other guy.
Was he Wong?
I didn't see it, but he may have been Wong.
He might have been
Wong. And this one,
it's Seth Rogen.
By Seth Rogen.
He
did a really good job.
He did. So Danny Boyle, this was originally supposed to be done by David Fincher, but the studio didn't give him what he wanted. He wanted Christian Bale to play Steve Jobs. The studio, Christian Bale couldn't do it or something like that. And then the studio, David Fincher had all these crazy demands.
Certainly Christian Bale could play the role. I think Fassbender is a better fit.
I think Christian Bale looks more like him than Fassbender does. Fassbender does a great job here, don't get me wrong. But I think Christian Bale could have, because Christian Bale is kind of, he can be a chameleon. I mean, I think he would have done an excellent job with it too. The cast is great in this. Cast is fantastic.
Really
good. And the screenplay by Aaron Sorkin is great too.
It's very Sorkin-like.
Basically, the premise of the movie is that it takes place, it's three major scenes. There are flashback scenes that occur throughout, so it does cover.
You hit the nail on the head in your review. It's staged like a play.
It's very much, yeah. And who did I talk to? Maybe it was Sean. It was Sean the other night at Halloween. He said the same thing. He's like, yeah, it's like a play. He's like, they could totally just take that and put it on the stage.
There's act one, there's act two, and there's act three.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's three pivotal product launches that Steve Jobs was behind.
So it's his life through these
throughout
three
his
launches.
Life. Yeah. And it goes, it's the original Macintosh computer from Apple.
There's the iMac.
There's the Macintosh. Then there's the next computer, which was a different company.
It's not even Apple. That's his.
That's
his
a company.
New company.
It's a company he went to after he parted ways with Apple.
The first time. Yeah.
The first time, and then the iMac launch, which was like his first big launch after he came back to Apple.
Right.
The story is basically told. I don't want to even say the story because there really isn't a story. It's just about his life. But the narrative is told through these conversations with the same characters over this period of time, and I think it's 14 years because it was 84
to 98,
88, and then 98.
Yeah,
and he
was 84 because then in 84 and then 88 is when he did next.
And then 98 was when he did iMac.
Yeah.
They mentioned the iPod in it. They have an idea at the very end.
It was a neat little kind of twist on it. You kind of saw it coming if you.
Right.
Yeah.
But the
I mean, how they brought it up.
Yeah.
Because the daughter they kept. Yeah.
Yeah. The main characters in it are Steve Jobs, played by Michael Fassbender, who looks nothing like Steve Jobs, but he sounded like him at least. You had Kate Winslet who played his right-hand woman.
Yeah, she was kind of the his almost like a publicist for him, you know, like his PR guy.
Yeah.
But
she's his work wife.
Yes. Yes.
And her character is Joanna Hoffman. I will say this, Kate Winslet is a great actress. I wondered why her accent showed up in this last two acts and it wasn't in the first act.
I didn't pick up on it.
I was like, where'd that accent
come from? I was just like, this is Kate Winslet, right?
Yeah.
Why haven't I seen her tits?
You also have
Seth Rogen. As
he plays
Steve Wozniak, who was Jobs' partner.
He was the co-founder of Apple with Steve Jobs.
Right. And Seth Rogen hit it out of the park.
Yeah, Seth Rogen was
really
great.
Good job here.
Seth Rogen was really, really good. And then you had an Apple engineer, Andy Hertzfeld, played by Michael Stuhlbarg.
Which Andy?
Yeah, right. Played by Michael Stuhlbarg. And he was friends with Jobs' ex. I don't even want to say wife because they didn't get married.
Right.
His ex, played by Catherine Waterston, who was in Inherent Vice. Yep. That was her big break. And then you also had John Scully, who's played by Jeff Daniels, and he was the Apple CEO.
Oh, he's put on some weight. I don't know if he did it for this role or not, but maybe. he got fucked.
Yeah, he did. And then, poor guy. And then so he was the Apple CEO that Steve Jobs actually hired to run the company.
Right, right. Which if you didn't know that before, that's kind of, you learn that a lot later on.
Right.
In this story of this movie. But yeah, he hires Sully as the CEO for Apple.
Right.
And then later, Sully ends up being the one that fires Jobs.
Right.
I mean, it's the board, but.
Right. Because what happens is that, you know, everybody remembers the success that Steve Jobs had with the iPad, the iPod,
before that,
iMac,
he had many failures.
But before that, he had many failures. So, he wanted to do the Macintosh. The big seller for Apple was a computer called the Apple II, which Wozniak was the main brainchild.
And that's very crucial to the story.
Right.
Because the deal with the Apple II, which again was Wozniak's and his team's baby.
Right.
Which is what built Apple.
Right.
Steve Jobs had nothing to do with that.
Right.
He had nothing to do with that. And
well, no, I think he helped. I think he helped design it, but he compromised constantly. No, he compromised constantly with Wozniak.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about when it was just them in there.
Right. And then Mac. And then
When it was just them in their
garage.
In the garage, yes. But when it was actually the Apple II, there was a team that was set
But that's the computer they brought. They did.
Right.
But Macintosh was Steve Jobs. It's 100%.
So Steve Jobs, his Achilles heel was that he would never compromise and he would never listen to anybody.
Yeah,
it was his way or the highway.
Yeah.
So Wozniak tried to convince him, you know, you need more ports. You need customization. People want customization. And Steve Jobs is like, no, you get two interfaces. That's all you need. You need a printer and a modem. That's it. That's all you get.
Right.
And a completely closed system. Wozniak was for the open system.
Right.
Steve Jobs was adamant about this being a closed system, which, if you know Apple, even today, it still follows those roots.
Right.
Okay. So that this led to them already being pitted against each other, even though they were best friends.
Right.
Okay. And then at the onset of the movie, you have the launch for the Macintosh, which is Steve Jobs' team. So you have Wozniak, who does the Apple II.
Right.
Steve Jobs has been working on this Macintosh with his team. All right. So he launches the Macintosh. He's fully expecting, he's fully expecting 1 million units sold.
Right.
Within a month.
Right.
Okay. That's his figures.
Right.
It launches, complete failure. It's called the Lisa, by the way.
Was that the Lisa? I think the Lisa was before that. Because this was just the Mac.
You're right. This is just the Mac.
The Lisa was before that.
Okay. So, yeah, you're right. Lisa was before that. By the way, his daughter's name.
It's Lisa.
So the Mac opens, huge failure.
Right.
Sold like 30,000 units.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy bad.
It was bad. And any normal person would be like, I must have done something wrong. here. I must have rethought this. Not Steve Jobs.
Not Steve Jobs.
Not Steve. Steve Jobs is still like, no, it is still, it, this, this, we must have marketed this wrong because this is the way people should. Steve Jobs, he didn't care what people wanted. His philosophy is we give them something and then they know they want it. As opposed to someone saying, I want this, build it for me.
Right. His attitude is also give them what they need.
Yeah. I know best for the consumer.
Yeah, the thing about Steve Jobs that is painfully apparent in this movie, and it's beaten to death in this movie really, is that yes, Steve Jobs was a genius. He was a marketing genius. He was also an unrepentant asshole.
He's an asshole. Any movie you've seen or whatever that paints him in a favorable light is incorrect. He's an asshole, and he has a very specific thought process. He will not waver from it. Now, as you see, and whether it's true or not, you know, he tried to have a little bit of, towards the end of his career, mm-hmm. his life, he tried to repent a little bit for some of the stuff he'd done, tried to be closer with his daughter.
Whom in the beginning
he tried to be closer with some other people.
Right, whom in the beginning he denies is even his.
Right, at the beginning of this movie, he refuses, even though he knows it's his,
yeah,
he denies it.
Right.
It's basically like the DNA test proved, not DNA test, but the paternity test proved that it's like 98% his.
Right.
He spins that into saying like 28% of the population could have had males in this world could have been the father of this baby. Somehow. Right. Some algorithm that he creates.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just a real asshole. And he refuses. His daughter and her mother are living on the poverty line where his stock is worth
millions.
$4 billion crazy. And he refuses to really give them money. He basically holds it over their head.
Right.
And writes some checks here and there to kind of keep them going.
Right.
Just going by what this story tells us, to be fair, the mom is kind of a fruit loop.
Yeah, she is.
Like she is terrible with spending the money.
She's dating. She's dating some pothead detective.
What do you call them with the crystals and the what do you? She's one of those people. New age people.
She's dating this pothead detective, she goes missing for a while. Different movie.
That's not right. But so the movie starts off with that launch.
Right.
Which is a complete failure.
Right.
After which, he refuses to compromise after that. Right. I mean, he's still adamant, mm-hmm. like, we need to keep pushing the Mac.
Right.
The board, Scully and the board are like, look, it failed. It's fine. We know you're smart. We just need to get you back to the drawing board.
Right.
We need to start looking at the Apple II, which is our bread and butter for making us money. He refuses.
Right.
And his reasoning for that is because he's all about control.
Right.
And the fact that he never had a hand in the Apple II, as far as launch
right.
is concerned, he refused to even acknowledge it.
Right.
This is a running issue that you see throughout the movie where Wozniak, of course, as we've mentioned, ran with the Apple II product line.
Right.
All he ever wanted from Steve Jobs through all these product launches is just acknowledge the Apple II team.
Right.
Just acknowledge him. Steve Jobs refused to do it. Even at the end, he refused. Unbelievable asshole. Wozniak wanted, and the people, by the way, was just say, and I'd like to acknowledge and thank the Apple II team for their part in the company. He refused at every turn to acknowledge the Apple II team publicly.
Was
such a dick move. It makes no logical sense why you wouldn't just
right.
do it.
I mean,
he refused to do it. Then comes into the next. Because he refuses to waver.
Yeah.
The board
has
no choice but to fire Steve Jobs. No choice.
Right.
He's like an anchor now with this Macintosh,
right.
weighing down the company. Scully tries to save him.
Right.
Tries anything that he. Scully was like a father figure to Steve Jobs. So Scully tried to save his job and his career.
He tried to save his job.
but Steve Jobs won't listen to anybody. Won't listen to reason. So they have no choice.
Just like Magneto.
So it's either Steve Jobs is going to push Scully out or Scully's going to fight for his job and push Steve Jobs out. Jobs gets fired unanimously. To which he says,
even he votes for himself.
It was crazy.
Yeah, fire me.
An unprecedented move.
So he's gone for a couple years, but he decides to come back with his next company.
Next.
Why don't you tell us about Next?
The Next was a big piece of shit. He was
which, by the way, he knew up front.
According to this movie, he knew up front, and
which, if it's true, and it wouldn't surprise me, again, just shows his marketing savvy. And
right. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And it basically, the Next computer was supposed to be designed for colleges, basically. Yeah,
education.
Yeah. And the unit was going to end up being like, what was it, like $30,000
or
something like that?
Well, no, $2,700 or something like that. Which,
but oh, no, I thought it was way more than that. No,
it was like $2,700, but back in, this, you got to remember, this is 88.
I thought it was way more than that.
It was like $2,700 to $3,000 a unit.
Yeah.
Crazily priced.
Yeah, and it was off the wall. And
crazily priced, but again, still had like just, it was uncustomizable. It was
right.
It was
a black cube. It was a cube.
Steve Jobs, the way this movie lets you think, is he's more concerned about the aesthetics of the look.
Which if you look at Apple's products, makes sense. And you know, so the movie leads you to believe, I mean, because again, while it's based on Isaacson's book, which was an authorized biography where he interviewed Steve Jobs and all that stuff. I mean, I remember there was a 60 Minutes story because it was after Steve Jobs died, obviously. They talked to Isaacson and he you know, interviewed him and for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. But apparently, he knew that the Next was going to be a steaming pile and a failure. But he also knew that the system that they created, the OS that they created, Apple would want.
Yep.
And he basically used it as a Trojan horse, basically, to get him back into the company.
He built this computer, as this movie and interviews would lead you to believe, for the sole purpose of selling the OS back to Apple and getting his foot back in the door at Apple.
Right.
That was the whole purpose. So he created a company, created a computer, but he really didn't.
Right.
Like there was no actual computer here.
Right.
It was just about creating the OS. The whole, even after launch, he didn't even have a computer.
Right.
So it was a disastrous flop.
Right.
But as he let Kate Winslet in on what he was doing, the only person who, even late in the game, he let know at the day of launch.
Right.
According to the movie again.
Yeah.
This
is all very dramatized.
Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah. Sole purpose of doing this was to get his foot back in the door at Apple. He always wanted to be back home.
Right.
And
then the final one is the iMac, where it's, you know, that's what they called the Blueberry. That's what they called it.
Yeah.
And like that was.
Yeah. And by the way, while he's doing this next thing, Apple's trying to launch new things like the Newton, completely failed.
they showed that clip from The Simpsons. So,
yeah. That was great.
And he goes, make a note on your Newton. And it says, like, beat up Martin. It says,
eat Martin something.
Martin.
Stupid Newton.
That's great. It's Martin in the head. Yeah, and then because of the Newton, John Scully gets fired from Apple. Yeah. And so then that leads.
And by the way, if you know anything about John Scully's career, he started out
at Pepsi.
Which is where he was wooed away from Pepsi by Steve Jobs.
Right.
And after that, he was like a pariah. He was a CEO leper because he was the guy that fired Steve Jobs.
Right.
And it turns out it wasn't true. And then Apple tanked, right?
Right.
So of course, Scully's the CEO. He's blamed for all this.
Right.
So he basically is almost a recluse after this because he can't buy a job.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that like, that's
but the one, story's untrue.
It's untrue because that leads to the flashback of the board meeting where basically Steve Jobs basically forced them to fire him.
Yeah, yeah. Steve Jobs, whether it's Steve Jobs in an interview saying this or whether he just lets the rumors run with it.
Right.
The rumors were that Scully strong-armed Steve Jobs and forced him out. And he was the reason for the Macintosh failure.
Right.
So
then they do the iMac. And throughout the movie, they're also going back to like his daughter and stuff like that, and he's trying to find redemption with his daughter because he's been a horrible asshole to her and her mother.
Really weird. It's really conflicting because you can tell that he doesn't love his daughter. It's part of that loves his daughter, but he still keeps her at a distance. It's really weird. I mean, I don't know how his mind really worked and all.
Yeah.
I mean. His true baby was Apple. That was his child.
Right.
That's who he really cared about.
Right. And it's a good movie. Steve Jobs is good, but As I wrote my review, I said, if you're a big fan of Apple and you worship the ground that Steve Jobs walks on, you're going to hate this movie. Because they really do.
It's more truth than not.
He's an unrepentant asshole in this movie. But I thought it was good. I enjoyed it.
So at the end of the movie, you have the iMac launch, which, as we now know, was huge success.
Yeah.
It actually did hit the million units sold in a month. And then at the end of the movie, he kind of, which is the day of the launch of the iMac.
Right.
He kind of, you're led to believe he reconciles a little bit with his daughter, at which point he says, oh, by the way, because she's always carrying around a Walkman.
Right.
He's like, oh, by the way, I'm going to put music in your pocket.
Right.
You know, and.
Yeah.
We know where that goes. And then the screen fades to actually white, I think, in this case.
Probably.
But I like this movie a lot.
I liked it.
It's a biopic, which I always kind of like anyway. But this one I really enjoyed. I thought it was a good movie.
Right. No, it was good. I think Sorkin will definitely get nominated. I think some of the actors might get nominated. Fassbender could, but Fassbender's also got Macbeth coming out, which looks to be more awards baity than Steve Jobs. But again, it's one of those movies. It's kind of like Bridge of Spies. It for me, it's like it was good. It was solid, but I was like, it was good. I mean, okay. I wasn't gonna.
I might have liked it a little better. I'd probably maybe give this a B plus.
I mean, I was definitely engaged by it. But it wasn't.
I was just happy to finally see what I would consider the real story.
Yeah, yeah, and then there's a lot of people I think that were friends of Steve Jobs.
People that love your Apple products. It's fine to do that, but Steve Jobs
was a dick.
He was a dick. He was an asshole. He was a genius, but he wasn't a genius in the way that most people think he was a genius.
Right.
He was purely a marketing strategist genius.
Right.
I'm not saying he didn't know how to build a computer, but that was Billy Wozniak.
But did he? Because Wozniak says that in the movie.
He says it at the end. He goes, you don't code.
You don't do hardware. Yeah. What do you do here? Yeah.
So, which, it's true. So,
and Seth Rogen was great. The whole cast was great. It was very, very solid movie.
Yeah, I say check this one out if you got the time.
If there's
nothing to rush out for. If there's
10 nominees for Best Picture, it'll probably get nominated for Best Picture. But I don't know if it should, personally.
Yeah, I'd have to go through my list and include there's still a lot more to come
there is
in the
a
next
lot
couple
come.
Months. But
Big Short, baby.
Yeah, the Big Short, that's right. Spotlight, which is coming up.
Yes.
We don't know how good that might be.
We're seeing that Wednesday. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I've been dying to see that.
But this is certainly a quality movie.
Right. One last thing. So Steve Jobs, definitely go see Steve Jobs because it's good. As long as you're not an Apple groupie and a Steve Jobs isn't your messiah, you'll probably like it.
Yeah.
There's another movie I saw.
And if he is, you should really see this movie to open your fucking eyes.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like a Scientology going clear. Another movie I saw that I guess you might see. So I won't go into it too much because it's coming out. It's supposed to go wide, I believe, this weekend.
Oh, yeah, I do want
to
see it.
Brie Larson in Room,
which
is excellent. If you have a chance to see Room, and we'll talk about it after you see it.
Okay.
But if you have a chance to go see Room, definitely go see that.
It's not The Room.
Not The Room.
Not The Room.
Oh, God.
No.
Oh, hi, guys. I did not hit her. I did not. Anyway.
Lisa, you're destroying me. Why are you tearing us apart, Lisa?
Tearing me apart. So that'll do it for this episode of the Hodgepodge Podcast. Yes to Steve Jobs, yes to Bridge of Spies, and
meh
to everything else, and a big no to Knock Knock.
Yeah. Just leave that door closed. Don't answer the door.
Our next episode will either be one of two things. It'll be maybe Attack of the Clones, but more than likely it's going to be James Bond.
Yeah.
The new James Bond film, Spectre, comes out this week. And we are seeing it Thursday night.
Can't wait.
In the IMAX. So, yeah. It's getting pretty good reviews for the most part.
Yeah, baby.
But we'll see. I don't know if it's getting as good reviews as Skyfall. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. I'm really curious to see what they do. And I want to see if my theory pans out for Christoph Waltz.
Okay. That's right. You do think you know.
But, yeah. We will see you next time, folks. Thanks for listening.
Care.